There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday, and we are live in Montgomery as it is day three of special session. And they're doing the, you know, they're doing the thing we pay them to do. They're busy over in the House and in Senate, probably starting about 1 o'clock. But the House has been in session, I think, since 10 this morning. And from the text we're getting from people on the inside, I'm hearing it's going to be a full day for them. Is that what you're hearing, Jeff?
Hearing the same thing.
Okay, so. Full day. They packed their Snickers or whatever it takes, and they're going to be in there as they are working through their portion. They're working through their portion of the accountability. Actually, well, the House went with the accountability. The first bill, the oversight and accountability, the House has passed that.
Right.
But you have next, of course, the actual revenue feature, and then we have the. The portion for the port, and we'll get to that. I do want to run through a couple of headlines here as we get the hour started and get your reaction. I did see the story where they now have revealed that it's Poarch Creek Indians that have stepped up to pay for the burial of those people in Lee County. It had been an unnamed corporation for the last
Out to be the Poarch Creeks.
Yeah,
right.
So now it's come out. The tribe is donating $184,000 to the East Alabama Medical Center Foundation to assist with the burial of the victims in Lee County. So that's out as of today. Then on some national, it's good to have you. Always good to hang out with you, but to have you right here in the same office to get your reactions. First of all, Bill Shineout, Communications Director at the White House. Is there any? You make anything of that? Any tell? Anything?
There was sort of some buzz about that happening, and I think there was kind of a whisper campaign about what Bill Shine and his ties to big media.
And, but he comes from Fox News. What do you mean? It's not a secret.
So there was a big kerfuffle. Let's call it that.
Okay, I'll go with that.
The Time Warner merger, where Time Warner was trying to merge with another company, and the Trump administration, Department of Justice, stepped in because they had antitrust reasons. They were like Comcast and Time Warner.
Okay.
And they said no. And the conspiracy theory out on the street was, well, Bill Shine, you know, Fox News didn't want to see that. So that's what. But his name had come up a few times. But, and here's something I would tell your listeners. These jobs in the White House, they're not career jobs.
Right.
You go in there and you do it for a few months, a few years.
The same thing happened. It happens in every administration. It happened in the Obama administration. It happened
right.
In the Bush administration. That is true. This idea that people go in and they're there for 4 years or 8 years, that doesn't happen.
No, because obviously Eric Holder was an exception. You know, he's the longest-serving attorney general in American history at the time.
Right, but I mean, look at former President Obama's press secretaries. How many times, you know, even Bush's press secretaries, turnover, turnover, turnover. I mean,
it wasn't too bad during the Obama years. We had, Robert Gibbs, and then Jay Carney, and then the last guy. Yeah,
three.
So, but these jobs in the White House, they are not meant to be, you don't go in all 4 years unless you're the president, usually.
Right.
Even cabinet secretaries, because, first of all, you're serving your country, because most of the people that are taking a job in the White House, you're taking it for a pay cut, and you don't get to you're not making what your earning potential.
Right, so and if you stay out of doing whatever you're doing
right.
for long enough, they won't have you back.
So you're serving your country. It's always seen as in that way that you're doing this out of service for your country, out of love for the country, and then you give your time. and you get paid like whatever the base salary is. It is not that much compared to what they could be making.
Right.
And they do it, and they go back to the private sector where they can make their living, take care of their family, or do whatever they need to do.
Right. Then also out of that's the Bill Shine story. The Manafort sentence. I think this I've been so focused on what's happening here in Montgomery that I have not had time to see the people just going berserk with upset. I'm sure it's out there. I have not seen it, but I'm sure it's out there with people upset with this Manafort sentence, because it was, I tell you what, it left me a little bit shocked, because if you drink the Kool-Aid, the mainstream narrative, we're talking about decades of a prison sentence for Manafort, and he ends up with what, 19 to 24 months?
Well, let's
remember, of course he's got another trial.
He's got another trial, and they'll probably hit him up pretty hard.
The federal one, right? This is the campaign tampering. It's like
there's two districts.
Southern district
involved. There's the Eastern Virginia District of Virginia, and the District Court of the District of Columbia. He's got to do the D.C. stuff next.
To make sure everything's balanced out. First of all, I was surprised, but I was interested in seeing it being way lighter in a sentence here. But yeah, he's not out of the woods yet.
Manafort was
doing some he's doing some bad stuff, man.
The part I would read into this, I would look at the sentence too much, because Manafort is going to get his, right? What I would look at is what this judge, T.S. Ellis, said to the prosecutors with the Mueller probe about this, telling them outright that you were just trying to squeeze this guy to go after the president of the United States, and I'm going to temper justice with mercy, and I don't think this is good for the system. He had these remarks, and it just set everybody in the sort of mainstream media, they just lost it. Morning Joe this morning, it was very upset about this judge making that statement about the Mueller probe. So Manafort, I think, is going to serve some time beyond what the sentence was, but I think a lot of people don't like that a federal judge is coming out and questioning the merits of the Mueller probe.
Well, if they do, what's precedent for them saying that publicly?
I'm sure it happens. I don't know. I mean, like, here I am.
Maybe it is. I'm not doing that rhetorically. I'm interested. I want to know.
Judges are very... there's a lot of them, so there's no one standard for federal judges, if that makes sense to you.
Right.
I think it's just different ones. It's probably not unprecedented totally, but I don't think that. I think that this judge doing it, it's not as out of the normal and out of precedent as it may seem.
Fair enough. So this next sentencing for Manafort is next week. All right. Also, let's take a look at that's what I have the latest here in Washington news, and also, of course, the battle royale over the executive or the emergency action on border. I mean, it's still,
yeah, that's
still my boy Rand Paul is a persona non grata, right?
He's persona non grata, but
another reason I like that guy.
I mean, this isn't gonna be a super veto proof super majority by any means. It'll get vetoed. What I would tell you, listeners, I think it's more important just to look and see who's with the president and who isn't here. I mean, it's not necessarily a loyalty thing or a loyalty to the Constitution, but it does kind of give us an idea of each of these senators' true colors.
Be some that aren't surprised to me. I mean, if you're surprised how Rand Paul moved on this, then you've not been watching Rand Paul.
No.
I mean, people acting shocked.
You didn't watch his daddy for years.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things I like about them. I like the consistency of it. But yeah, he's been called everything but a child of God, even though you got to remember just what, months ago, some of the only friend the president had on certain things were Rand Paul and a few others. Now he's like the only enemy, they'll say, but he's the only friend sometimes as well. So, I mean, he's consistent to his ideals. But does Rand Paul derail this whole thing?
No. None of this. But it does at least lend some credibility to Rand Paul and voting along the lines of his convictions and his beliefs, right?
Yeah, he did that through the Obama administration. He's done it through the Trump administration.
You disagree with it. A lot of people have a problem with that. They think that you're too rigidly ideological, and that's, you can't govern if you're that. But for the people that are the true believers, he has a follower following. He has a, you know, a legit following that no one else is going to have. It's just, it's one of those things of politics where you're not going to be able to govern and get along with everybody in every circumstance, but you're going to have a group of people that are going to admire
you. But he's never nasty about it to the president. He and Trump get along,
this is just what I do.
Exactly.
And this is how you got to, you know, I'll work with you, but just certain lines we don't cross.
There it is. Coming right back. We are live in Montgomery. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
The gas tax.
If it had a problem at 5 cents, it certainly should have a double problem or more at 12 or 15%.
Sean Sullivan is in Montgomery on FM Talk 106.5.
And we are live from Secretary of State John Merrill's office to the point that Jeff Poore and I have... he's not even here today. He just he took his business elsewhere.
He's thrown in a towel. He just heard enough hot taking between Dale Jackson, Sean Sullivan, and Jeff Poore. He got out of town, and he is not... It wears on you after a while, I suppose.
I don't know where he has gone in the state, but, of course, a lot of our state delegation over in Lee County, as President Trump, along with First Lady Melania Trump, touring storm-ravaged parts of Lee County today. You have this, of course, the photo op thing. And I want to go through this because I've really not looked at national news at all today because I've been so focused on what's going on right here across the street from us and trying to keep the best, best gauge of what's happening with this, these bills on infrastructure. But if you remember the critique, and it happened over Bush 43 and it happened over Obama, when a president would go to a storm ravaged zone.
Right.
There's always a critique factor. Oh, they're taking away from it. They're, you know what? They're
right. They're in the middle of it, and people are trying to get their lives right together. And
here they are. They're going to take away from local resources, right, and law enforcement, and all that.
Well, and that's what they say. But
I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I don't care who's in. I don't care who is in. At first, way back when, I heard that argument, and I said, "Oh, okay, maybe." But the value of having the president of the United States, no matter what party, no matter what your politics, come to the place and bring all the TV cameras there, then when there has to be a vote on something in Washington to give funding for that area or something, those members of the House and Senate in Washington, now their constituents have seen that video. Those constituents have heard the story of that family. And now when they go to vote for helping out people in other parts of other states, it's okay because their constituents know.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you get excited when the President of the United States comes and you get to go see the President? I mean, maybe not so much for us, but just if you're an average person listening out there, and you the President's a big deal, right?
It's a very big deal.
He is a very busy man with a lot of things going on, be it Obama, be it Trump, be it Bush, be it Clinton.
Right.
Going down the line, they come to your hometown, that means something because they are dropping these matters of international importance, of national importance, and they are coming to this storm-ravaged area, and they
bring the attention with them.
It's not even about the attention. It's that this is a leader of the free world coming to you, and I think it's a morale booster to a lot of people that have had some bad luck.
Is.
I mean, you had tornadoes come through last week, but now you have the President of the United States coming to, and he says, you know, everything's going to be...
No, you're right.
The moment I always think of is George W. Bush at 9/11 when he went to Ground Zero, and he's, I assure you...
Had the bullhorn.
It gets people excited, and it's a morale booster more than anything. And I don't care who the president is, it's still the office of the presidency.
Yep.
So the naysayers are always going to be there, and they're always going to be invoking politics into these situations. But what I think is, when this has happened, it's something that people should be appreciative of.
Yeah, no matter what party it is, and you're saying it the right way. The morale booster, the make you feel like somebody is paying attention and cares. And then I'm almost under the hood in the portion where it makes it a lot better for your community when this is something in front of the federal legislature and they're trying to appropriate funds or things to help out,
right?
Then you have people, you know what, somebody now in Spokane, somebody in Seattle, somebody in Los Angeles, somebody in Schenectady, in New York, they're going to see the video, they're going to see what happened, because
see what happened,
you know, and then
say
they're
a prayer for these people.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're not a believer in prayer, but or maybe they're going to send make a monetary donation to the American Red Cross. You know, the naysayers, I think, are just the ones that are playing the politics, and that's kind of that's kind of the game there.
And so, yeah, you got to make sure you, when you hear somebody doing that, kind of maybe offer some of these arguments. I guess it is a good thing that the president is in and in our state. Now, of course, this is going on. This was one of the things that in the rumor mill last week, earlier this week on Monday, that people thought might delay what's happening right now. And that would be Governor Ivey calling the special session, right? We're in the special session now. Some people had thought, well, maybe will the governor be able to call the special session on the backdrop of the fatalities and the widespread damage in Lee County? You know, just the political optics of it. It seemed like it didn't faze Governor Ivey.
It didn't faze her at all, and I do think it may have pushed it back a day.
Okay.
Instead of calling on Sunday, she called it on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it didn't faze her at all, and it doesn't seem to... There just doesn't seem to be any consequences for it.
No, and I don't think it, because I, you know what, I hadn't, because it's kind of at this point she gave the State of the State address, told the legislature, here's what I want you to get working on.
Right.
I'm going to go do the executive branch stuff. I'm in Lee County. Y'all go to work here across the street.
That's essentially right. And that it's, so she's, Kay Ivey's the one doing the tours and walking the grounds there. I actually went to Wetumpka.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, back and forth. So is it Wetumpka?
It's Wetumpka. Okay. According to the locals.
Okay, Wetumpka, good.
According to the rest of Alabama.
Okay.
But and I followed her around on one of these where she's walking around and visiting all these damaged homes, and not that far from here in Wetumpka, right across the river there, and on the north bank of the river. That's where the tornadoes came through and just laid, mm-hmm. you know, just tore everything. And we were talking about the Porch Creek Indians earlier. They gave money. Funny story about that. They gave money to a church that lost its steeple, and the church sent the money back to them.
I remember we had this story. Yeah, Dalton and I were talking about this story back home. So
it's not unheard of for Wind Creek and the Porch Creeks to do these gestures, but not everybody's, I guess, open to them. But anyway, I followed Governor Ivey around on one of these disaster tours, and it's essentially the sheriff or I believe it's a county commission president for Elmore County was with her, and the mayor of Wetumpka, and just kind of saying this is this and this is, you know, this is this home is so-and-so's, and introducing her to people. So I've seen her in that element,
and she does
all right. She does really well in that element, and you know, she's on top of it. A lot of governors, I think, in the past weren't quite as responsive. It would take a little more time for them, but she was there like 2 days afterwards.
Pretty good stuff. Speaks well of Governor Kay Ivey. Some people got some questions here on the infrastructure bills, gas tax. This is a good question here, because we have talked about it, but we hadn't talked about it in the last probably hour or so. How will we be sure to get our fair share of the tax money and it not go to counties in North Alabama? You know, and that's that. Hey, listen, that unnamed texture, I'm with you, because that's how it feels to be South Alabama.
And we get the same questions in North Alabama.
Okay, so it's all regional.
When I'm on the air up there, they will say, "Well, you know, they're getting money for that port. That port is a big hot button for North Alabama."
Right. Here's the thing: when the RBP money went to the rest of the state, we didn't get anything out of that.
But that doesn't. They don't. You know, people in North Alabama don't even know what BP is. I mean, they knew about the oil spill and the settlement, but they didn't understand that. Really, what happened in North Alabama, it really wasn't the people of North Alabama. It was their members of the legislature that did that and didn't even really tell them about, you know, this.
Sure.
And they're like it was handed to them. So.
Okay, so
but I get the same question that y'all get.
That's interesting. So people up in Huntsville are asking the same question like somebody in Mobile or Baldwin County would.
And I went to a meeting, a Republican club meeting in the Shoals area, and there was one woman like really upset that they were taking money from the gas tax to give to the Port of Mobile. Now, you know, that's the way it's perceived to a lot of people in North Alabama, that we're paying more at the gas tank, more when we fill up our gas tank because of those guys down at Mobile, down at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in Mobile has something to do with the beach. So
we're all one big Jimmy Buffett album.
Your
cover.
Big I-10 bridge across the bay. That's just a bridge to for y'all to go to the beach.
Yeah, to go listen to Jimmy Buffett.
So it's interesting the way people perceive each other in this state, that we're spread out and we're a little tribal and a little geographic in that regard. But you know. Since I got back in the Alabama political game, the state of Alabama seems a lot smaller than it maybe seems on a map. And it, all you guys, like, everybody's kind of the same, but they still view each other as different in the different parts of the state.
Well put. I want to say to address this out, you know, Jeff did a perfect job of saying, hey, Texter, you know, there's a bunch of people that feel like you. On the how you will make sure to get the fair share, so to speak, here from your text, let's go back to some of the details of how the revenue would come to the come out of the gas tax money. Okay, you have a split of money going to municipalities and counties and money going to the state.
Right.
Okay, so it's not like you get two bites at the apple. Like you have your local money bite. It's similar, actually, the way, speaking of BP, the way some of the BP Restore Act money was applied, because there were different kind of projects. There were local projects that were just for business and try to help business get back on their feet. And then there was this other pot of money that was for environmental projects. But I would often caution, if we could involve an environmental project with a business restoration project, those two things would come together and you could magnify them. Same thing here. There'll be a portion that goes to counties and municipalities, but if they want to then petition for ALDOT and do projects and work with them and then pull that other money back in with the money that the state, they can put those together and do more. Like, you can do a project. You and I can run Poor Town, Jeff Poor Town, Alabama. And if we decide that we want to do a road that ALDOT doesn't want to do, we still have some money.
We still have that power to do that. The county's not so much, but the cities do, so they can work together
and do their thing.
Right.
But if we decided, hey, this might be of benefit to the entire state, we could get money coming from a state side to do that and put it together. We'll come right back. We'll talk more about this right here on Midday Mobile. We're live in Montgomery. Glad you're here.
I am willing to call you, the members of the Alabama legislature, into a special session if necessary.
Governor Ivey calls a joint session to pass a gas tax increase.
We need to rebuild Alabama's infrastructure.
Sean Sullivan is live in Montgomery on FM Talk 106.5.
And welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and Midday Mobile on this Friday, a day two live from Montgomery and day three of special session here in Montgomery. And a big thank you once again to Secretary of State John Merrill for his hospitality, really, for hosting not only myself, but my buddy Jeff Poor, also Dale Jackson, in here, because we have straight up busted up in his office for 2 days, and he's been really, really gracious to let us do our shows here. And we are right across the street from the State House, so this is perfect. And by the way, if you have not come up and seen your Capitol lately, taken the tour of Montgomery, I went back into straight tourist mode. My buddy Jeff has been dealing with me, dragging me around like a, you know, I got the big floppy hat and the camera and the blue socks and the sandals, and I really enjoyed this last day and a half here in Montgomery. And I'll be coming back soon. It really is a neat place for even a day trip for people from Southwest Alabama to come up. You know, I come through Montgomery all the time, but I don't ever stop and come to the Capitol and do all this. It's been a long time.
Right, when you're coming through on the interstate, probably, and
you're going somewhere.
You're not really getting. You're just kind of flying by, and your vision of Montgomery, you don't really see much. You cross the bridge there, and then you're on to Prattville, and you're on up your way. Yep. You know,
People need to take. I mean, you can come down here, park. There are places to eat, things to see. The archives, which is so really cool, that's across from us as
but
well.
But you don't realize, and it took me. When I got older, I've learned to appreciate it more. But you walk by Martin Luther King Jr.'s church, and then you walk a little further down the street, and you see the AEA right next to it, and all these household names, the Alabama Supreme Court. You go down a little further down Dexter, and this is all coming downstairs from the Capitol. You're right there at Chris's Hot Dogs, where I took you yesterday, where, you know, that's a long time
great stuff.
Establishment. There, then you go a little further, there's the Rosa Parks bus stop.
I mean, we walked around. These are the things Jeff and I have done the last day. We've gone around and seen all these historical markers, and I know, coming from Mobile and the historical city of Mobile, we're so very proud of it, and there's some really, really old history in Mobile, but there's some really great cool spots in history here in Montgomery. So, I mean, you were laughing yesterday. You said, "Oh, you're sounding like a, you know, you're doing a doing an endorsement for come visit Montgomery." I guess I am. I really have enjoyed it. So,
yeah, and you do get a lot out of these visits. I think they're not quite the movers and shakers like we see on Fox News and CNN,
right?
But it is a good condensed version of seeing how, you know, a legislative process, a legislative body works.
Well, you lived in Washington and followed it up there for a long time,
right?
And you said this is, you know, a condensed version, but you see the same kind of, you know, intrigue and
same kind of intrigue, same kind of gossiping, the same kind, you know, it's just on such a smaller, very much smaller scale. But,
right,
you know, the restaurant we wanted to go to last night was closed for a private event. What do you think they were doing there? You know,
right,
like, you know,
that's what they were actually doing, the real work that they can't, you know, and then they
that's
go in
the,
there.
That's the what we used to call the smoke field back room kind of situation there, which
right,
is fine. I mean, I know how, but, you know, XYZ Trade Association is putting a whole hosting event and have all the legislators come in, or their staffs, and it's just kind of how business is done. In D.C., you can't walk 5 feet down Pennsylvania Avenue past the Capitol without, you know, any of the establishments not having some kind of party or some kind of big dinner like that as well. So this is kind of a more condensed version of it, and you could get, you know, you could get a lot out of it in just a day, whereas D.C., I feel like you need it took me like a year just to even know my way around.
And it's like I go back to this with the archives too, because I'm kind of a history nerd, museum nerd, and stuff like that. It's
right,
nice to have the archives right across the road here. I want to get your take on a couple more things here before we start wrapping it up. First of all, this Alabama food stamp testing bill. This is not the first time this has come up. I mean, sometimes we're replaying the hits here. It was, you know, this is something former Senator Tripp Pittman had brought up a couple times.
It's one of those things that gets demagogued, and it's easy to demagogue because people will say, well, if you're going to drug test for food stamps, what about the children of the parents that are doing the drugs? They're not doing drugs. Why are we punishing them?
Right.
I don't have a good answer for that. But there's always that pushback aspect to it. Whenever this bill comes up,
they're acting. A lot of news groups I'm looking at are acting like this is new, and I'm going, this comes up about
it reoccurs a lot. And then Representative Tommy Haynes up in Northeast Alabama has a bill that, and he was pretty big upon it, and he was, you know, explaining that, well, you know what happens is these food stamps get taken to the black market and they get traded for drugs, and something needs to be done.
Right.
And what's the natural reaction? Well, just drug test them, and if they don't pass a drug test, then they can't get the food stamp benefits. So, and I think that's very simplistic in some ways, but that seems to be it seems to be a problem for some people that their tax dollars are getting.
I think it should be a problem for all people. It's just realistically, can you fix it?
Yeah, I mean, is human nature just what it is?
Like, I don't want that to exist either. But do you? And if you know what, if the parents would go hungry, that's one thing. But I don't think anybody, you know, there would have to be a solution for the children not to suffer because of the stupidity. Yeah, if the parents are hungry, I really don't care if they're going to do drugs. But children,
if they didn't buy bread and bologna for sandwiches and they bought crystal meth instead, then I think, what are you going to, you know, how are you, we live in a free society and people are free to make decisions, and as long as we have that, those people are going to make bad decisions.
Well, and we're choosing, that the question is, do you choose to be able to give assistance at all? And that's the issue. This one here, where is it? Oh, back to the charging station thing. Yeah, from this morning. No, this is, I think this is interesting, where there's that component to the gas tax, the middle one, the revenue bill, that talks about $2.50. Well, it was $2.50. They've reduced it. It was $2.50 and $1.25.
Right.
In other words, for full electric vehicles, $2.50. For hybrid vehicles, $1.25. This would be a yearly fee they would pay to help pay their wear and tear on the roads. But part of that was also going to building these charging stations. And somebody had texted in and said, well, nobody paid them to build gas stations. True. But in this case, you have a chance that these people who need charging stations to use their electric vehicles can pay a fee each year.
Right.
And it's not just a straight fee. They're building something they need.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a big incentive for, I think if your electric vehicle proponent. You should be not opposing the charge here, but get on board.
Well,
how else is it going to get built?
I think there's a cultural aspect here that you're overlooking. I think you're talking about how much sense it makes, and that's fine. But a lot of people look at these hybrid vehicles and these electric vehicles as green tree hugging kind of hippies. And
how many of them drive bad boy buggies when they go turkey hunting? Though electric vehicles,
in the woods, you know. There is still a segment of society that looks at making these charging stations a taxpayer thing, and then they are against
that. But what if it's the user? The same way it's a user, it would be only the people that have electric vehicles.
You can make all the arguments you can make till you're blue in the face, Sean. I'm telling you, there is a cultural aspect to this that people do not want. They don't like it. They're just be closed-minded to it. And we could say, well, what are you going to do with those people? Well, those people still pay taxes. They still got to pay the gas tax. So, like, I hear them and I respect them. I think you're right.
I don't want...
They're probably wrong, but there is that element of it. And as long as there's that element of it, it at least deserves noticing.
You know, and you're right. And those people, I get what you're saying, but there are also people that are on this... I guess the people I'm talking to are the people that are saying they're big proponents of electric vehicles.
Right.
And they're really upset that they would have to pay some amount of this gas tax. You see, the people I'm talking to, I'm going, wait a second.
Well, those people. Those people are going to be. Those are the Kyle Whitmires, and those are the world known
types. That's one of the people who put it up. I think Kyle Whitmire was as shallow-minded as possible in his comments about it.
Those are going to be people that are going to be opposed to anything a Republican-led legislature and a Republican-controlled governorship are going to be against everything. So they think that because they're driving an electric vehicle, there's some kind of virtue to it, and they shouldn't have to pay to be virtuous.
Probably what he said. All right, coming right back, we'll wrap it up here on Midday Mobile, live from Montgomery.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Welcome back into the FM Talk 106.5 studio. My buddy Ed Rowan with Taylor Martino. Also, my buddy Ed Rowan from the U.S. Marine Corps. Man, thanks for coming back on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, Sean.
This is a conversation you and I have been having for quite a while. Your service for our country and also your love for your fellow members of the U.S. Armed Services and what you can do for them in your capacity now. This is something you've been doing for years.
Yeah, in my practice, you know, being a lawyer representing injured people, from time to time I come across servicemen and even Marines that I get to represent, and I'm just passionate about it. You know, one thing is I love going in front of a jury with somebody that has served our country, because I mean that's somebody that's going to have credibility and that, you know, a jury is really going to be thankful for. So I tend to get a little bit aggressive in those cases because I've just got a great client, and I've got a new situation here with these defective earplugs that were made by 3M, and we've done our due diligence and we've investigated this case, and we've decided to handle this case. And so I've been talking to a lot of Marines that the Marines know about their hearing loss, and I'm very concerned about it.
Yeah, okay, this is because some of us have heard just a little bit about it. Then you gave me a bunch of more information. People might have heard something about this. So these are hearing protection, inside the ear hearing protection, right?
That's right. So there's a company called 3M. It's one of the largest companies in America. They manufactured some unique looking earplugs. And from 2003 to 2015, we think that time period, they provided these to the military. They sold them to the military, made a killing off of it. You know, anything that you sell, particularly during a wartime situation, as a manufacturer to the military, you're going to make a killing. And it turns out that the testing that was done by the company themselves before selling these earplugs to the Marines, all the services, that the testing showed that they were defective. And so you had issued earplugs to the servicemen or women that went and fought for our country, and the repayment that they got for fighting for our country was defective earplugs that they didn't know were defective, that were issued to them, that they had to wear, and that caused hearing loss. There's a massive problem of hearing loss with the vets that are coming back from the Middle East from the past 10, 12, 15 years.
So let's circle back for a second. You said they had to wear them.
And this is this idea. Explain it. As a Marine, as a service member, I mean, when you say you have to wear them, what does that mean?
Right. So when you're issued a piece of gear in the Marines or in any branch, as far as I know, but I just know Marines, you have to wear that. For instance, you're issued boots.
Okay.
And everybody has to wear the same kind of boots. It's kind of like your uniform. It kind of is your uniform.
It is, yeah.
So you may have some fancy boots that you got from a hiking store or whatever. They're much more comfortable, blah, blah, blah. You'd rather wear those. But you're issued the boots, you have to wear the boots. And, you would get in a mess of trouble and push-ups and all kinds of punishment if you came out with some different type of gear as an enlisted man.
This is what you're issued. This is what you wear.
You're issued it. You wear it. So the bottom line is that they were issued these earplugs. They had to wear them. If they didn't wear them, they're going to get in trouble. They're going to get yelled at, and then they're going to put the earplugs in. So they didn't have a choice. They had to wear these earplugs. And unknowing to any of the servicemen or women, unknowing to the military at the time, the earplugs were defective.
Yeah, okay, and that's a fair thing to point out. The commanders there, they're telling you wear your earplugs. They don't know that these things are defective. They're just saying wear your earplugs so you can protect your hearing.
Yeah, so before you sell something to the military as a manufacturer, you have to fill out, as you can imagine, all kinds of paperwork, and you have to assert that this product has been tested and it's safe and it meets all of the required standards. Well, it appears that this product was not tested according to the proper standards. And that was not reflected on the paperwork. But regardless of that, there was a whistleblower lawsuit that was settled by the company for a little over $9 million because of this company, 3M, selling a defective earplug to the military. So you don't go out as a company and pay $9 million if your product is
safe. If you did all the stuff you're
safe.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, you talk about this as, fellow Marines, but this is affecting more branches. I mean, more than just Marines were issued these.
Yes, the entire military was issued the same earplug. It's a sort of a honeycomb-looking earplug, and it's yellow on one end, and it's green on the other end. All you have to do is ask a serviceman or woman, were they issued those honeycomb looking earplugs that were yellow on one side, green on the other side? They know exactly what you're talking about, and they wore them. And then your next question usually is, were you around weapon fire or loud explosions while you're wearing those earplugs? Yes, I was. And then your next question is, do you have a hearing loss? And it's startling the amount of hearing loss problems that I'm hearing of. It's just rampant. It's a massive problem.
You pointed something out to me too when we're talking that is different maybe than the general populace, because when somebody's enlisted, they go through a physical getting in, and so there is a baseline for what their hearing was before their service.
Yeah, so that's one of the things I really like about this case, is because you have a baseline. But when you go into the military, like when I went to the Marines, we had to go up to Montgomery and go through a process they call MEPS, where you have a head-to-toe physical, including a hearing test. So when the servicemen and women are going into the military, they're getting a hearing test, so it shows what their baseline is, so we can see what their hearing was as they went into the military. And when you exit, you're supposed to get a hearing test, but let's just say you hadn't, for whatever reason you didn't get that, you can still get a hearing test, and we can see where you're at now.
Yeah, where you were when you went in, here's your hearing, here's your ability, and now here's where you are at this point.
Yeah, I deal with it in injury cases all the time, where I have a client that didn't have certain pains and conditions like in their spine or other areas of their body. We get an MRI and it shows a lot of abnormalities. Well, the other side always likes to argue, how do we know that this wreck caused the MRI? And it certainly would be nice before whatever the wreck or the incident to have, let's say a day before that, to have an MRI.
Sure.
And then have the MRI after that injury.
Probably not going to happen very often.
Doesn't happen very often. But in this case, we have the guys in the and gals in the military that went in and had a hearing test, so we can see what it was like going in, and we can see what it's like going out or currently.
All right. So hearing loss, and also you discussed tinnitus.
Yeah, tinnitus is just kind of permanent ringing of the ears. Just like if you've ever fired a weapon or had a loud noise and you have that ringing afterwards, that may be a temporary tinnitus. But can you imagine having that as a permanent?
Be maddening. Maddening.
That's the sad part about it is because, and I was talking to you about this, I mean, it's one thing, and it's terrible to have a limp or, you know, let's say there's something with your arm that you can't use it quite as well as you used to, and there's some horrific, you know, physical injuries that came from wartime in the Middle East, but anything that affects your ability to communicate, your ability to think, your mental process, it's really devastating to your life, and certainly hearing loss and a permanent ringing in your ear is just maddening, like you said, and it affects people seriously.
There's people listening to us right now that probably wonder if this is them. If they have, you know, they served during this period of time, they may feel like they have the hearing loss. If they have the tinnitus, for sure, they have a reason. Talking to those folks, also talking to family members or friends who may know somebody who isn't listening right now, but they've seen this issue.
Yeah. Well, one thing, I don't know if you know many Marines, but Marines are stubborn.
I know a bunch of y'all.
Marines... they don't like to admit that they're hurting.
Right.
You know, when you go through Paris Island or whatever boot camp in the Marines, you're sort of indoctrinated to don't ever complain and don't go to the sick bay until you're basically dead. And so that's why the only time I went to the sick bay was when I had a bone literally sticking out of my foot, and I still didn't go. The drill instructor made me go to the sick bay. So, yes, the family members are a good source.
Right, there may be somebody out there that can help out that Marine or that service member.
I've talked to a number of Marines, and they said that their spouses or their friends or whomever have been encouraging them, you know, to go seek help for this, you know, for this hearing loss and this tinnitus, and they hadn't really done anything about it. So oftentimes, at least for Marines, and I know a lot of servicemen have those, and women have the same characteristics, you're stubborn, you don't like to admit that you're suffering, so it takes a...
But you're not going to get, I mean, the hearing's not coming back. You've lost the hearing. Not saying anything's not going to bring your hearing back.
Yeah, once the hearing's lost, it's gone. I mean, there's, you know, certain types of implants, but I wouldn't put an implant in my ear.
Whether it is an affected member of the armed services or a loved one, friend, whatever, of that member, they want to get in touch with you, talk with you. How do they do this? They just pick up the phone? Is there a special number? What do they do?
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're local, you can just call us at 251-433-3131. You can Google Taylor Martino Law Firm, Mobile, Alabama, or you can... You can find us at www.taylormartino.com.
All right. And if you got any questions, send us a note here because I'll get you through to Ed Rowan with Taylor Martino. Thanks, man.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.